Chairman Cooper, it is now 5:30.
Very much. Very good. Thank you. Good evening, everybody, and this welcome to the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency's Engineering and Operations Committee meeting for March 7th. With that, we will go directly to the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand and join.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Yeah, item two is public comments. No public here. Any public comments online?
Seeing none.
Thank you. Item three, SCV Water Agency's Water Master Plan.
Yeah, I'd like to introduce Tori. He's been here before from Hazen and Sawyer, who is working on our master plan, and he is going to give us an update on where we're at and what we've been working on the master plan.
All right. Thank you guys for having me back. So we're here to talk about the water master plan and here to update you on the project. So next slide. So the major scope elements of the master plan: data collection, field condition assessments, hydraulic model analysis, system evaluation, capital improvement plan, and a master plan report. Next slide. So last time I was here was in August, of this past August, and I updated you on these components of the project that we had done the previous 6 months: hydraulic model field work and calibration, hydraulic model analysis, water quality analysis, pipeline risk assessment, condition assessment recommendations, and Saugus well siting. Next slide. And then here, so since August till now, the main things we've been working on are capital improvement plan development and the draft master plan report. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about in this presentation. So regarding the CIP development, we go ahead and do the slide. We look at a lot of different things as part of your system. We look at supply, storage, pumping, pressure, pipelines, fire flow. We consider a lot of different things. We look at your water quality data. We look at your wells and your groundwater. We do condition assessment that we talked about, risk analysis, and several other things that we do as part of the master plan. Next slide. So we're going to talk to you about a couple of different analyses that we do and kind of just so you can understand like how we get to how we do our evaluation and how we get to recommendations. So supply evaluation. So as an agency, the Urban Water Management Plan projects that you'll be in and have a demand of 80 MGD by 2050. So we need to make sure that you guys have the facilities to be able to meet that demand, both current and in the future. We look at it both from an average annual perspective, right? What we call average day demand. That's if you take your average annual demand divided by 365. That's what you average out in a day. And that's the type of demands that you have kind of in like the off-peak months, not the winter, not the summer, kind of in the fall and the spring. And we also look at the maximum day demand. So making sure that you guys have the capacity to meet those maximum demands that happen in the hottest days of the year. So we look at your surface water treatment plant capacity, we look at well capacity, and we also look at your storage and tanks and make sure you guys can meet those requirements. Next slide. When we look at storage, it's commonly looked at as tanks, but we look at both tanks and your local water supply. And when we say local water supply, that's the water that you guys have access to within your system. So that includes your groundwater treatment, your groundwater well. It includes like the surface water treatment that you have, because Castaic Lake and Earl Schmidt, that's in your system. So we look at, you know, the capacity that you have from your water treatment plants. So when we make recommendations for new storage, it's not just more storage is better. You have to balance water quality. You need to tanks need to turn over. You need to fluctuate that water, you know, every couple of days or on a daily basis, depending on the size of the tank. And you look at your local supply. So when we look at the need for adding storage to your system, you look at all these things kind of together as part of our analysis. Next slide. With your pump stations, we evaluate pump capacity based on what's called firm capacity. So that firm capacity is when you're evaluating the largest pump out of service, what do you have remaining? So that just provides a factor of safety, and that's kind of how industry standard is when you're sizing pump stations. And you know, we have different requirements for what a pump station needs to do depending if it's a pump station that serves what's called an open zone or a pressure zone that has storage, that has tanks. or a pressure zones that doesn't have storage, and it's just strictly a pump supply that meets all demands of the zone. Next slide. We use the hydraulic model to look at low pressures and fire flow analysis within your system. So the hydraulic model as we kind of talked about in a previous presentation, we have a hydraulic model of your system. We calibrate it based on real world conditions. And then we run that model and identify the areas in your system that might be susceptible to low pressure or low fire flow availability. When the model identifies those locations, it just doesn't end there. It's an iterative process that we do is, you know, we identify those locations and work with your staff, your engineering and operations staff to identify those locations and kind of work through, like, are you guys seeing that out in the field? Are you guys aware of that? Are you guys doing things to reconcile those low pressures or low fire flow? And if there's something that, you know, maybe that we didn't know in the model, then we make that change in the model to refine the model. If there's something that maybe it was new to operations, that's something that they'll, you know, go out and check, like, hey, you know, the model showing low pressure or low fire flow availability in this area. Why don't we go on the field and check that and see if that's actually the case? Next slide. So we look at your groundwater system. We had a subconsultant, Thomas Harder and Company, that did a condition assessment of all your wells. So that's looking at all your downhole video logs, looking at your well as-built, and also doing a physical condition assessment at your wells, and coming up with series of recommendations on all your existing wells, on which wells need to be rehabilitated, which wells are fine as is, which wells should be replaced. Next slide. We looked at your water quality data of your wells. So this is where we gathered all your water quality data and did our own analysis and kind of looked at the plant treatment plants you guys already have, identified if there's any additional treatment plants that would need to be added to the CIP. For the existing treatment plants that are already planned, just us doing a second check of that water quality data and checking, like, do we agree with that recommendation? If there's any other considerations that you guys should consider when you go ahead and implement those projects, like additional constituents to be aware of. Next slide. I've spoken about condition assessment. This is where we had a team of civil, mechanical, electrical, and structural engineers go out to several of your facilities. It was about a four-week period where our teams were in the field going to several of your facilities, and that's where we're looking at every single piece of equipment at some of your most critical facilities and identifying what the condition of those are, the operability of those equipment, and ultimately coming up with recommendations. And those recommendations are projects that we have in the capital improvement program. Next. And we also did a risk analysis of your pipeline. So we look at your pipelines in a lot of different ways. We use the hydraulic model to analyze the pipelines. We also look at the pipelines in this form of risk analysis, where we're looking at all these different criteria and identifying which pipelines in your system are most vulnerable, which pipelines are going to cause the biggest issue if they were to have a break. And from that, and what we call risk analysis, determining a recommended pipeline replacement program that goes in the CIP. Next slide. So all those different analyses come together and that goes into the CIP. So the CIP is a compilation of projects that come from a lot of different sources. So those sources include condition assessment, system analysis, groundwater analysis, the hydraulic model, the risk analysis, and just other. I mean, the other could be projects like looking at, do you have adequate backup power at some of your pump stations? Are there operations and maintenance projects that, you know, that didn't get caught in some of the analysis that we do? Are there staff recommendations, new trouble spots in your system that need to be at part of the CIP? So kind of all those are all the different sources of what kind of filters their way into the capital improvement program. Next slide. And what comes is, costs. So cost is obviously a very important part of your capital improvement program. You guys need to know, if we're going to recommend a project, how much is it going to cost the agency? The way we do that is we have our own internal cost estimators, the same estimators that estimate for our design projects. We follow the what's called the AACE International Best Practices based on these different levels of project definition. Master planning level project definition is a higher level than, say, a final design where you know exactly every component that's going to be part of the project. Go ahead, next slide. So when we do a cost estimate, what we do is we develop the construction cost, but then to identify the full project cost, we apply what we call adders as a percentage of the construction cost to give you what the full project cost would be to the agency. So that includes contingency for a certain level of unknowns. It includes design costs, services during construction, construction management costs, internal admin and legal costs to get to your full project costs. And we put those in current 2024 dollars. Next slide. So all those different project sources analysis kind of generate projects. We identify the cost for all the projects. What comes of that is all different types of projects that go in your CIP. So those projects include projects from the condition assessments. They include pump stations, reservoirs, water quality and treatment projects, interconnections, pipeline replacement programs, pipeline condition assessment recommendations, and well rehabs and replacements. And that's the bulk of what all the projects are in the recommended CIP. Next slide. So the CIP is one of the components that we've been working on. We're working towards the draft master plan, the final report that we're going to be delivering to your agency. Next slide. So the draft master plan is that we wanted to speak to what the deliverable products, what that's going to look like, what's that physically going to look like. So what we agree with your staff is we're going to be delivering kind of two main things, both a traditional master plan and digital tools. So when we say traditional master plan, you can go to the next slide. This is a report that includes all your standard chapters that all the main analysis that we did as part of this master plan effort, full documentation of your system of, you know, the legacy systems. There's not four different master plans. It's all kind of one system. So identifying all your reservoirs, all your pump stations, all your meters and pipelines, full documentation on the system, on your demands, design criteria that we would use to evaluate facilities, documentation on how the hydraulic model was built and how it was calibrated through system evaluation and ultimately the capital improvement program. Next slide. So kind of question is, you know, in today's age and everything being digital and AI and machine learning, why are we going with it? Why is a traditional master plan, you know, one of the components? It's comprehensive documentation of your system all in one place. Supersedes the previous legacy master plans that you guys have. We want this master plan to be like your primary resource for your system. We don't want you to have to go to, you know, the old master plan for this, the old master plan for this. This is going to be supersede all of that previous work. There's too much information to really fit into a purely digital format. You know, you're a system of 100 tanks and 900 miles of pipe and, 60 MG, 80 MGD system. There's just so much kind of different aspects of your system that really just to try to put that in a purely digital format would be difficult to try to fit all that. I say this is an advantage, it's low tech. It's easy for anyone to access. You know, you're going to have hard copy reports. You're going to have searchable PDFs, something that you can put on the website, easily kind of reference whenever you need. Next slide. But there will also be digital tools. I've talked to you guys about some digital tools in the previous presentations. And so we have two main digital tools that we're going to be submitting as part of the master plan. One is called a CIP story map. So the story map is a interactive GIS map of your capital improvement program. So what that allows you to do is have a full map of your system and see what all the identified projects are within your system that are coming out of the CIP. So you can kind of look at it from the system-wide perspective. You can look at it from a zoomed-in perspective. You can drill down to each one of the projects, click on it, get all the information you would need from the project. It's a really nice tool that can be used internally. It can be used kind of in this setting. It provides kind of a visual roadmap of your future plan capital improvements. It allows updating and, you know, as time goes on, if projects are advanced, if projects are delayed, you know, your static copy, you know, that's going to be what it is. But this is where we could be making changes to like a dynamic tool that you can update and update the years that we implement it. Navigate your projects kind of from a graphical standpoint, get all the data you need and kind of see kind of where all these different projects are within your system. And it's something that you could use as an internal tool and something you guys can use as an external tool. That's something that can be done either way. Next slide. And then the other thing we talked about, I've talked about previously, is Power BI. Power BI can do a lot of different things. We developed a dashboard of the condition assessment work that we did for your system. So that's another tool that we're going to be handing off as part of the master plan. So this is also a tool that can be looked at from your system from a high level perspective. You can kind of just see, here's all of our facilities in our system, here's all the equipment, and you can drill down to the most, you know, minute, the valve at this pump station, and click on it and see all the different parameters on it and see it was inspected on this date. You know, it was found to be in fair condition. Here's why, here's the notes from the condition assessment team. So you can look at all that through Power BI, and you can, it just allows you to kind of see that from a super high level perspective, super drill down perspective, whatever works best for you guys. And it's also a tool that you can host, and it can be used internally here for staff. It can be shared in this setting. There's a lot of different ways you can use Power BI and how you want to host that. Next slide. So finally, schedule kind of where we're at. Next slide. You know, we're in the final phase of this project. We are developing the first submittal of the draft master plan report right now, which you get it to Courtney's team, you know, this month. And, you know, we expect there to be multiple iterations. You know, they're going to be reviewed. Your staff is going to be reviewing it, giving us comments, but you know, we expect this process to wrap up in the Q2, Q3 timeframe, between, you know, this first submittal and probably three submittals before, you know, we're all accepting of the final product. So that's kind of the overall schedule for the tool. That's the presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Yeah. Any questions from outside?
Seeing none.
Over here. Very good. Questions from the committee?
No, thank you. All right,
floor is ours.
Can you go back to page 11 of the report and page 11 of the board packet 2? It shows the well condition assessment and the water quality analysis.
Yep.
But the well condition assessment that's being done by Thomas Harder and his company, will that assessment be available on the Power BI dashboards to findings?
We could make it right now. It is not, but it's something that we could build into it.
Unless only if the staff needs it.
Yeah. It sounds like that would be beneficial. Yeah.
Okay. And then click next, maybe. All right.
There it is.
So we find that you found like well 206. And this well C-01 exceeds one or more PFAS evaluation criteria, but no treatment is applied or planned. Mr. Abercrombie, and Mr. Mayo, do you agree with that assessment for those two wells?
I think well 206 had one instance that is now no longer triggered, so it is in use. Specifically for that one well, 206 and 207, we had one indication, but it now since testing, we are able to do
operation.
Okay.
So although it doesn't have the state's no plan treatment, that one we could incorporate if it does show a positive test into the future Saugus 3 and 4 that are planned in that area with treatment, but those are also not showing any levels of PFAS.
Right.
And so treatment may not be required. So right now there is no planned treatment for there, but we have contingency to apply treatment if they do eventually develop PFAS.
Yeah, it looks like 207 is in the
correct.
Okay, and then what about well P-03-05?
Those were fairly low producing wells, and so they did have a PFAS impact, but they're in a location and with the production that they have, it's not generally thought to be feasible to treat them.
Understood. So at this point, this assessment, have your team have spent time to assess these findings yet? Or is that the next plan?
Yeah, we've been working closely with them.
Understood. And the Power BI dashboards, I know you mentioned that before, so you will be producing them. How many people on our team will be responsible then to kind of take over and update them? Or is that the plan?
Yeah, we're going to have some training in place. We already have access to the Power BI. We've been working with it for a while. Ultimately, we're developing an asset management team, and the asset management team will be the ones to update it and keep it current.
Okay.
And that's a combination between our IT group and the engineering group and operations. So we have participation from all.
All right, understood. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Back to you, Chair.
Thank you. Director Peterson.
Very good, Tori. It's really interesting seeing the final report after hearing about it a couple of times in the last couple of years. One of the, I noticed, and then talking about the assessments, did you assess the two treatment plants?
There was specific parts of the process that the engineering operations team recommended that we focus on that. So one of them was the intake pump station. So it wasn't all aspects of the plant. It was the aspects that the engineering and ops team said, like, if we don't need to look at everything, let's send the team just to these specific parts. Yeah.
I was just holistically, are we thinking about that we are these two surface treatment plants are at full capacity for build out presently?
Well, I mean, build out demands for the urban water management plant is 80 MGD. Mm-hmm. The combined capacity of the two plants is around 120 yeah. MGD. And, you know, you also have groundwater treatment capacity. So you guys are in a good spot when it comes to overall supply facilities. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah, there's a good level of redundancy there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. President Martin.
Well, thank you for the presentation. Very concise, to the point presentation. Appreciate that. A couple of questions. One is, as we move forward with implementing the recommendations that come out of this, the traditional master plan, which is a kind of on paper thing, mm-hmm. that's not exactly a living document, right? I mean, the condition assessment dashboard, is that a living document, so to speak, that can be updated when programs and projects are completed? We can update the section of pipeline now. That's newer.
Yes.
Is that something that...
The digital tools can easily be updated ongoing as projects are implemented. That's very okay. easy.
So it's it's never outdated to a point where it's... diminishes right. its usefulness.
Right. Those digital tools can be updated very easily. And even to a certain extent, the report, I mean, you know, it's a report. It can easily be updated on a yearly basis. It can be updated as needed. You know, we're not going anywhere, you know, when you're on-call consultant. So, you know, like any kind of updating of the report can be done as often as is beneficial to the agency.
Good.
And we are, to add to that, we are looking at, as an example, when development projects either exceed or greatly reduce the volume of homes or volume of water demand for that site than anticipated, then we're likely to require them to do an addendum to the master plan so that we have an updated version specific to that project. The scope of that will be to depend on the size of the project. It could be a localized sub-area master plan that you are piggybacking, and it details it, but we'll require anyone who has a change in the scope that we already master planned provide us with that addendum so we keep it up to date with new development coming in.
The hydraulic model, is this something that we'll use specific for this project, and will the agency be left with the running and useful model that can be used?
Yes. Yeah, it was built specifically for your agency, specifically for this project. It was calibrated based on current conditions as part of this project. It's your model. You know, anything that we develop as or produce as part of this project, the agency owns. You know, we've been doing ongoing hydraulic model training to your staff on our model, on the model that we created. So we've been working with members of Courtney's team, training them. So it's the training's been ongoing. We've been passing it back and forth. You know, we're continuing to work on it. We'll pass it back to your staff. They'll say, hey, we need you to do this. We need you to look into that. So that kind of iterative process has been ongoing. When the project is over, we will hand off the model, you know, and it will be yours to continue to utilize. But again, we're not going anywhere. As updates are needed, you know, new developments come online, changes in developments, you know, we're happy to keep updating as things, you know, as your system changes.
And as he stated, we're currently using that model. Yeah. It's already been handed over, and our staff is using it to run fire flows and do analysis of pipeline work for operations.
Good, good. Sounds good. Last question. Obviously, it's an extensive inventory of all the components of our agency. And I assume we already had a GIS-based inventory of our projects. Is this replacing that, or is it being...
No, it's adding to it. So we're using that. It fed into them. They've expanded on it and identified where we could do some additional work, some drill down, but we gave them the basis. They updated it, and we're taking that back.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Look forward to the report.
Yeah. Thank you.
So just a quick follow-up. So the condition assessment of all facilities, looking forward to the report, but based on what you've seen so far, any major issues with switchboards, PLCs, or?
I mean, there was the condition assessment. I mean, for the most part, we had electrical engineers looking at it. I mean, usually when we're looking at PLCs and switchboards, like first we're looking at functionality, is it doing what it needs to do? But that equipment has a lifetime. So we're identifying if it's working properly now, just like based on when it was installed, you know, when you need to schedule that piece of equipment to replace. So it's not only kind of the condition it is now, but just based on its age. And how long that equipment typically lasts, this is when you should probably plan to replace it.
So life cycle is also inspected and surveyed for all that equipment, right?
Correct, yeah. So that goes into the recommendations. You know, we're looking at a piece of equipment and it's 20 years old. Is it operating like it's 20 years old? Does it look like it's 20 years old? You know, how much life expectancy can we expect out of this piece of equipment? And that's going into the recommendations.
Okay.
And we've definitely prioritized our projects as well. So we know which ones are critical path. And part of that prioritization is criticality of the facility, all of those features, but also the inspection. And we targeted the inspection on the areas that we knew had the most issues. So those are definitely going to come out in the report. A lot of those we already know. Operations is obviously very diligent, and they're running the machines on a regular basis, and they know which ones also need to be replaced. So that information fed in to the report. We're able to give them the real-world boots on the ground from the people who have been using it as to how it's operating and give them that information. So I think from that perspective, we're really getting a lot more feedback from this and know which ones to focus on, where our priorities is, where projects have to happen first so that we are replacing it the day before it breaks, which is our goal.
Okay.
Everything.
No. Thank you for that transparency and utilizing the third party to even help them identify things that you already know. Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I feel like we're probably on the phone with, you know, your staff, your operations staff every day. You know, pretty much it's very much an iterative process. It's not just us take your data and go away for a couple months and come back. It's there's a constant conversation because, yeah, there's so much more information. You know, I feel like, you know, we're building this to make the most value for your agency, but we want at the same time want to make sure that we're absorbing all that knowledge that your staff has. Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Well, everybody pretty much got all the same questions that I had, except one is, you know, you look at it operationally, how it's doing and kind of how it is right now. You're taking a snapshot of it as now. Do you deal in our overall asset management program? Do you look at our management practices, our asset management practices for all of this equipment as well. You say, you know, there's a life cycle and everything has a life cycle. But have you looked at our program to see if our asset management program is meeting the needs of what you're serving?
I guess not specifically in that regard. We are more or less looking at it in terms of, like, we're talking with your operations staff and understanding what they do, but we're not seeing anything that is concerning or anything in the way that equipment is managed or operated. I mean, we're mainly trying to gain information from them just to understand that we analyze it accurately. But I mean, as far as, I guess, management of the equipment, like, there's no...
So you don't look at, like, here's a pump.
Yeah.
What's its asset management schedule? What needs to be done after 10 years? Does it need to be taken apart and rebuilt? Or you don't look at that as a part of it?
I guess it's built into our condition assessment recommendations that, like, when we are analyzing the equipment, we're evaluating, you know, based on how old it is and how what it looks like today and how it's operating, you know, how much, where do you can expect this piece of equipment to be in 20 years? Does it need to be replaced in 20 years? Does it need to be rehabilitated now so it can last another 40 years? So that's kind of how we're looking at it.
We have some other items that are in there too, like, obviously, whenever there's breaks or there's other items that have been done repair, that gets factored into the risk assessment, therefore the prioritization for replacement of those projects. And that can apply to the pump stations as well, reservoirs as well. How often do we have to go out there and maintain it? Do we have to send staff on a regular basis? Is there efficiency gained by doing a replacement or something else to that site because the maintenance schedule is increasing? So from that aspect of the asset management, we are applying it, but not a full asset management program where we're talking about analyzing the last time it was maintained or the maintenance schedule that it has or the valve turning schedule that they have. That hasn't been applied because we're still developing a lot of that asset management program.
Good. Any other questions? Very good. Good presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the update.
Thank you.
Next time, hopefully, it'll be the full presentation with the document.
That'll be the final.
And that'll probably go to the full board as well.
And we expect that when?
We're just talking about that. I mean, we're submitting the first to middle of the draft probably this month. So we expect probably later in the summer. I mean.
Oh, good. That's it.
Time frame. Yeah.
We just want to go through, you know, we're going to tweak it. We're going to go through and look through it. And so it's going to have 2 to 3 iterations of that before it's ready to be documented.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item 4, real property activity report.
Christina Jacob.
Christina. Oh, good.
Hello, good evening, Chairman Cooper and committee members. My name is Christina Jacob. I'm the right-of-way agent here at SCV Water. As part of the board policy update that was brought to this committee and then approved by the board in 2022, this is the semi-annual report of transactions to the Engineering and Operations Committee per the board policy that the general manager shall provide a semi-annual report of transactions executed pursuant to the authority granted in this section to the Engineering and Operations Committee. Oh, I'm sorry. Next slide, please. Thank you, Liz. The red dots on this map show the locations of the easements that have been recorded. So anytime pipelines are within privately owned property outside of the public right-of-way, we will need to have access to build and maintain pipelines. Because of this, we need the easements and those that have been granted to us since our last update in October of last year are on this slide. So we received pipeline easements for the Mission Village development, which is on the left, the most western dot on the screen, and the Tesoro development, specifically phase 5. It's the most northerly part of the city boundary that's outlined in pink on this map. And then we've also had the opportunity to clarify our prescriptive easement rights by recording easements from property owners on Bonita Lane. So that location is the easternmost dot on the map. Operations and maintenance is upgrading the current galvanized main line, which was installed in 1963. And this was installed across four parcels to serve three homes. Since our infrastructure has been in place for over 5 years, but there was not a recorded easement on the property, this gave us an opportunity to work with property owners who chose to clarify this right on their properties for our pipeline replacement project. This may look familiar to you as it was approved by the committee on July 6th of last year and then approved by the board on August 1st. Next slide, please. Other property interests include deeds for property granted to us, licenses, and leases. So since our last update, we recorded the deed for the Castaic High School pump station property and its access easement. That's the most northerly point on the map on this slide. And then when we want someone, when we want to use someone else's property for one of our projects, we enter into a license agreement, such as for the Saugus Well 2 rehabilitation. And that is the southernmost point on this map on this slide. This also may look familiar to you as it was recommended by this committee on October 5th of last year, and they went to board approval on October 17th. When others want to use our property, we can amend an existing lease as we did for the Action Family Counseling lease at our building at 22722 Soledad Canyon Road. So that's a little bit west of where the Saugus Well 2 is, or excuse me, east. That's the most easterly point on the map. So this was approved by the Finance and Administration Committee in September of last year and then recommended for board approval also on October 17th. We also entered into a license agreement for our property to allow access for fiber installation at Hart Softball Field. And that's right in the lower middle on the map. And not pictured on this map is a license that we just recently signed with the City of Santa Clarita for their limited access to one of the parcels that we own that's in the river. And with that, this concludes this real property activity update. Back to you.
Good. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
Anything from outside?
None.
Committee. Questions?
Any issues, any concerns, any legal concerns, anything like that?
There haven't been on this real property. I mean, other than the kind, the back and forth, just the nature of potential negotiations. But we've had a pretty good process, and we always work closely with Best and Krieger, our legal, to draft the licenses. So no real issues the past few months.
Thank you, Ms. Jacob. Back to you, Chair.
Questions? President Martin, I have no questions. Mr. Peterson, nothing.
Thank you for the news.
Hey, Christina, good report, by the way. Thank you. And has the Sand Canyon Homeowners Mutual Water Agency out there got their straightened out yet, their easements, so that we can...
I'd probably be better to answer that. I know Christina's been working with the Homeowners Association president out there, but I've been meeting with him on a weekly basis, basically. They have one homeowner right now that has not given them an easement, and therefore they cannot provide the easement to us. We've looked at different alternatives and what we can do, and really it's an impasse right now. They've reached out to us, and they're scheduling a meeting with that homeowner and us and the HOA to kind of walk through the issue and the understanding. They believe that maybe that homeowner doesn't understand. They don't have a home on that lot, but they have the right to the pipeline that serves multiple other people, and they have been reluctant to provide an easement. And so they maybe if they understand the intent for us to maintain that main, or for the homeowners association to be able to privatize that section of the main so that they can go through and serve the other customers, benefits them in the long run if they ever want to build a home or subdivide the home. They're going to bring us in to have that conversation. Without that, we can't finish service. We can't take it over. They still have to do some other items on the easements on site to perfect their rights, but at least they have the easement and the right to convey, so we can get the easements from them. But there's no point in starting that work and that cost until we have all of the, they have all of the right to grant. But we will continue to work with them. They are still motivated to do so. And this seems to be the last hiccup, other than cost of pipe, which they are running into a cost issue. We are looking at cost benefit analysis to see there are some benefits to the agency to have this system as far as a water quality and a pipeline up to another zone. If we are able to go through this area as opposed to building our own pipe to resolve a head loss issue to the Placerita zone where we have trouble filling another tank. So we're looking at that to see what the benefit would be and what the cost would be if we were to run through another alignment. And we will probably eventually have to bring that back to the board. But first step is they have to get their easement sorted before we can do any of that.
Yeah, that's only been 18 years probably that it's been in the running.
Yeah. Unfortunately, their president right now is very motivated, and he is taking every week, taking time to meet, let me know about progress. A quick phone call every Monday morning, 7 a.m.
And I think there's money that's available from the state to for us to be able to absorb those mutuals.
Yeah, they don't qualify because they are definitely not low income. And so they aren't in the need. And the state funding has mostly dried up with the budget concerns. So you really have to have a need and a defined need for that money to be done. We have asked, and we've been working with them on the other projects, the Lark and New Mint, and working with them to get some money through there. But this one has never qualified.
Yeah, that makes sense. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Good evening. Okay. Item 5, recommend approval of resolution authorizing the GM to apply for grant funding under the Federal Bureau of Rec for Water Smart Water Energy Efficiency Grant Program. This is for the program. This is pretty simple.
Thank you. And we have the thank you. Good evening, members of the Engineering Operations Committee. Consistent with board direction to pursue grant opportunities, in February of 2024, staff has submitted an application for the Bureau of Reclamation's Water Smart Water Energy Efficiency Grant Program to fund a portion of the Automated Meter Infrastructure, AMI, Replacement Project Phase 2. Next slide, please. AMI project. So the agency is committed to converting all 75,000 service connections to AMI technology by 2028. AMI meters have the capability of communicating using real-time data accessed through WaterSmart portal being developed. AMI systems can achieve water consumption savings up to 15%. Customers will see real-time data enabling them to make more informed decisions about their water use. Next slide, please. Just a little bit of background. November of 2021, $2 million grant funding for the AMI program was awarded. Over 21,163 new AMI meters will be installed. Conversion of 10,000 meters to AMI, which going from AMR to AMI, drive-by to tower read, required customer engagement portal, which is the WaterSmart in progress, completion expected mid-2024, but rolled out probably toward the end of the year, and over $1.1 million reimbursements to date. Next slide, please. AMI Phase 2 project. The BOR WaterSmart Water Efficiency Grant Program Phase 2 application, February 2024, up to $5 million in matching funds matches up to 50% of projected costs with a maximum of $5 million. Replaces approximately 15,000 meters to AMI, approximately 5,000 per year. Projected costs are estimated at $7.5 million with a grant request of about $3.7 in reimbursements. The project completion is June of 2028 with start date of July of 2025. Next slide, please. This slide changed a little bit with the adoption of the new strategic plan. This project supports SCV Water Strategic Plan Goal C.4.8, evaluate infrastructure technology, AMI, AMR, and operational strategies to better manage demands, and Goal C, water supply and resource sustainability, implement programs to ensure the service area has reliable and sustainable supplies of water. Next slide, please. Financial consideration. AMI project costs will be included in fiscal year 2025-26 through fiscal year 2027-28 budget. Projected costs estimated about $2 million per fiscal year, and 50% of project costs will be recovered from the grant up to $5 million. So the recommendation is that the board, that the Engineering and Operations Committee recommends that the Board of Directors authorize one, a resolution authorizing the General Manager to apply for the for funding under the Bureau of Reclamation's Water Smart Water Energy Efficiency Grant Program, Phase 2. Two, execute a grant agreement and carry out responsibilities under any future grant agreement. And three, commit to providing funding match of at least 50% and up to the balance of funds necessary to complete the project. This concludes my presentation. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Very good. Thank you, Steve. Liz?
Seeing none.
Lee? Director Orzechowski.
Mr. Patterson, I'm getting a little bit concerned. So this is great. You know, we're getting money from the federal BOR, which is a lot of money here. Can we expect that to continue to 2008? I mean, is that we kind of are becoming dependent on?
This will finish out by 2028, our entire system will be changed out with this last grant.
Okay. So this is it.
Okay. This is the end. Yeah.
All right. Good to go.
Any other questions?
No, it seems like an easy one. It should go to consent.
Should go to consent. Very good. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Monthly operations and production report.
I just have a couple of things. Main thing I wanted to talk about was water levels and production or rainfall. You can see in that report that the rain levels for this, at least the first 4 months of this year were not spectacular, 6 inches or so, which is, poor. However, February, which isn't on this report because it's in the next month's report, recovered a lot of that with over 12 inches of rain. So we'll still, it looks like we'll still exceed our annual, rate precipitation forecast. And that doesn't even account March, which has already dumped some rain on us. Part of that's reflective in some of the graphs. If you look at online our water level graphs, and surprisingly, we've actually seen. You recall over the past, many months over the past year, I would report on wells that would have what I called a record all time high based on our reporting history that the water level was at a high point. Periodically, we surpass those high points and make new high points. So what we actually had in January had 5 wells make new all-time highs. And of all of our wells, which is like 44 or so, only 8 wells showed what I would call a small decline in water level in that last month. So all wells were either rising or basically flat.
with most oaths being on the upward trajectory. That's really all I have to report.
Good. Okay. All good news. Outside questions?
Seeing none.
Committee?
Any reasons why that they wells are declining?
Well, ventures and.
It just depends. I mean, a lot of them are wells that we put on production that's for these treatment facilities for the wells running 24/7.
Okay.
So you're seeing the decline is here and the water level's been like this, you know, historically. So they're not. It's not as.
So these are frequently used wells. So
these are wells that are being used heavily.
That is good.
Nothing else.
All good. Thank
you, Mr. Abercrombie. CIP projects, Mr. Mayo.
I got quite a few of them. Some of them will be coming off the list here. We're trying to close them out. Our closeout process does take a little while when we're trying to get the final as-built. Usually our final little details on there. But we will be removing some of these from the list. Quite a few projects going on and quite a few more projects coming up. So with that, I'll leave it up to the board.
Thank you. Ready? Very good. Planning calendar.
We have a couple busy months coming up. April and May have a lot of projects coming forward. We do make every effort that we can to try to balance out our number of projects, but we have had some delays due to sometimes just making sure the projects are good. We're working with the consultants. We don't want to bring a project that is not complete and ready to go and have everything comfortable. We're trying to keep those change orders at an absolute minimum. Sometimes that means taking a little extra time to do the review to make sure we have it right. Unfortunately, that means we jammed a lot of these projects together in April and May. Good thing is we will start to get those projects rolling, and next year is looking to be like a pretty heavy construction year because we're going to be finishing design on quite a few projects at the end of this fiscal year. With that, I'll open it up.
Seeing none.
Thank you. Committee.
Just one quick question on page 57. So this will come on April. Recommend approval of resolution authorizing Santa Clara Valley Water Agency to provide water quality laboratory testing services to DWR. Is this just a certification process or are you going to be processing samples from DWR?
This is a BS layer for serving as their lab.
Okay.
Processing samples from primarily, I think, Pyramid Lake, but may also be other reservoirs in the area. And we've been doing that for years. They actually pay. We charge them for the samples, so it's no loss to us. But for some odd reason, for them to enter into the agreement to ask us to do that, they require us to have a resolution from the board saying the board authorizes us to do that. So that's what that's about.
We've been doing this for 20 years. It's the visitor center that's up there at Lake Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
We do their water testing for that visitor center.
Okay. All right.
It's minor testing.
The water is safe.
Well, good money there.
Are you here for April 4th?
No. I'll be gone in April, so. And Courtney's going to be gone, but he's going to zoom in on you, I guess, sir.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll be in your home area. We're going to Poland.
Poland, nice.
Yeah. Going to Bucharest and Budapest and then up to Poland. Okay. Nothing else for planning calendar? It's going to get very busy. And hopefully a lot of this can go on consent calendar so we don't bog the board down too much.
There are some big projects that will probably not make it on the consent. So.
General report on treatment, distribution, and operations.
I wanted to start out, this is probably a repeat, because if you were at the last board meeting, I believe Matt pointed this out, but we had one of our water system supervisors, a long-term employee, Roger Hitchin, retired, 32 years. So a lot of institutional knowledge there. He's only a phone call away, and we'll make use of him if we need to. And we've had a process in place where he's been shadowing, or I should say one of Courtney's engineers has been shadowing him to, kind of get the lowdown on things and whatnot. So I think we'll survive. It's always a little scary, especially for the people that are working with him more directly when that person leaves. But we wish him the best. With regard to some other staffing issues, we've hired probably a dozen different employees over the past year, maybe 6 months. I don't know. Not new positions. These are positions that are being filled when somebody leaves or somebody retires. And I wanted to give you a little bit of a overview. Some of those positions that, we've been hiring, a few of them have come from private sector. They've been in construction or other things that were sort of applicable and they fit in. But most of them are coming from other public water agencies. And these might be Glendale. We've had maybe three from Glendale Water and Power. Las Virgenes, Quartz Hill, Pasadena, and the city of Simi Valley. So we are being competitive in the industry. We're bringing them in periodically. We still lose, however, occasionally. We lost two last the end of last year, I think it was, to the DWP. So it's always hard to compete with DWP, and so you occasionally have that. But it's a the bigger issue is, even though you say you have you have 50 people on the payroll in this group, you never have 50 because you're always trying to fill 5 or 10 of those positions depending on what's happening. But we are close to being fully staffed again, and we'll be doing it all over at some point in the future, no doubt. But staff works hard to try to bring in qualified workers, and a lot of these, where we have 3 or 4 people that have come in from like Quartz Hill, a lot of that's word of mouth from the first employee that got in here from Quartz Hill. And he's talking to his buddies about how great a place it is to work and staff and whatnot. And so that's worked out. A couple other things to update you on. Steve talked about the AMI grant that we're going to be moving forward. Phase one grant, is still underway with regard to the implementation of that. And so we've installed a number of meters over thousands of meters over the past few years. The most recent phase dealt with meters in generally in the Castaic area and a little beyond that. And we knew going into it that might be a little problematic because it's an older area. You don't know how easy it will be to change out things and issues you'll run into. And so we did run into, we knew we'd have some issues, but we had a few more than we had initially planned. And a lot of them had to do with the meter basically was too high in the box. There's the AMI meters have devices on them with regard to transmitting the radio signals, and the old meter might have been right touching the lid, and the new meters won't fit. So that requires you to lower part of the piping in the box to get the meters in. So, but those processes are all being worked through, and the contractors are working through that. With regard to the new grant that we're pursuing in the next range of meters, we'll be doing some of that in-house like we have been, but a lot of it will probably be contracted out as in these past rounds of the previous grants. We've contracted out with, outside vendors to come in and do the main change out process. Courtney talks all the time about CFP projects and all these PFAS systems and everything that we've got being built, trying to get these things online. Well, one piece of that process falls within the water quality group, and that's the work to basically get our operating permit with Division of Drinking Water changed so that we can actually operate and produce water from that plant for drinking purposes. And so that process is handled by our water quality group and Ryan By's section, and essentially they are preparing technical reports that go to the Division of Drinking Water, which then are reviewed with a fine-tooth comb sometimes, and back and forth iterations to make things happen. But they're pretty good about, you know, getting these things put together now and put in. I mean, these are big, complicated reports that explain every detail of how that treatment plant works. Safeguards and what type of operators we have to have to operate in. So that is all put in place. And specifically with regard to our next plant that comes online, the Santa Clara Hanbi, I believe, is probably the next one, that report has been submitted recently. They are reviewing it, and so we don't anticipate any issues with having the report in hand when the Courtney turns over the keys. I reported previously about the, or you're aware of the media testing plant that we put in place at the InWells facility, where we have a consultant running a pilot scale sort of plant that is testing, I think, four different types of media at the same time to determine some of these new medias that are coming on the market, to run the test, to be able to get buy-in from DDW and for us to understand which media works best, so that at some point in time we could, you know, have other choices than just the one or two big brands that are on the market now that you're kind of stuck with. Well, that plant has garnered some attention from entities, and we gave a tour to DWP, LADWP last week. They came out, a truckload of them, and we went through the facility and so forth. We are also giving an in-field tour to our Division of Drinking Water reps coming up soon. A couple of construction projects. You know, we have a well in Castaic that one of our crews has been installing a drain line. This is a flush-to-way drain line. Not all wells had really good flush-to-way drain lines. Some were just sort of flush to ground. So this has been a long process that was involved to get all the various permits and approvals to get that facility installed. They are wrapping that up next week. And at that point in time, they will be moving into this Bonita Lane project that Christina was talking about. That, again, has been one that's, you know, we've sort of got your approval to do it a long time ago, but it's taken the time to get to that point. So, but we are making progress. And lastly, but not least, the, you know, 500-pound gorilla in the room has been budgets, which, suck in almost everybody on every level in the departments, not just operations, but in every department in the agency. So that's taking a lot of effort from staff time right now, too. That's my report.
Very good.
Seeing no public comment.
Questions from the committee?
Any results from those four or five medias that are being tested?
We do have, we have daily results are being collected and presented to us probably weekly in very various graphical format and so forth. So I would say that, you know, this is a year process on these things. So a definitive result isn't here yet, but there is initial results that looks real promising for some of the media that, you know, if it pans out, some of that media looks like it might be better choices for us going forward. You know, you have to, you know, some things might be more expensive at the get-go, but it lasts three times as long. So on a per unit of water treated, you know, your cost is lower. So that's all what's going into this analysis to really understand and look at the, you know, they're testing for, I think it's 24 different PFAS compounds at the present time. And they're all different. So certain ones will break through one media maybe and not the other. So that's all being sort of analyzed and looked at. But it does look like it will show, and I think from the interest we've seen from industry in this study, that it is something that's going to have significant value for us. Yeah.
Since you bring up our wonderful health department, have we got consolidated permits yet?
Mike's probably finding his button. No, we don't. But we actually, believe it or not, I was probably the biggest skeptic in the room when Mike's like, we got to get this happening. You know, like, they don't, because every time we dealt with them, they really didn't seem to have a lot of interest. However, we are making progress. There's a number of steps that we have to go through in various plans that we have to create internally, where we create a sampling plan, for instance. There's a consolidated sampling plan as opposed to seven separate sampling plans. And that is all happening, and a lot of it has happened and has been submitted to Division of Drinking Water. And so I'm optimistic that we'll see significant movement here in the next 6 to 12 months.
Good. Yeah, Keith, when you talked about staff turnover, I was curious. You did say that we are competitive. And so I know staff turnover is a fact of life. We always go through it for various reasons, retirements and so forth. But just want to make sure that, in your opinion, was this an unusually busy turnover period? Or is this,
It seemed that way, but, you know, we have turnover routinely. And it's not always of those numbers, some of them are because the person moved to Colorado, or something which wasn't necessarily it was a family issue or something. It wasn't necessarily us being competitive or not being competitive. Some of it is people chose to follow an extra little bit of money that they can get from DWP or another entity like that. You know, we are competitive, and you're seeing that by the fact that we're bringing people in. We aren't at the top of the range. That's never been our plan or model as to how we design wages. And so you will always lose to those if somebody's just following that. But I think in general, you know, we see that the people coming in are happy with working here. And I think you see that by the fact that these people are poaching more of their friends to come from them. And, you know, like Glendale and Forts Hill, I kind of don't want to run into those people at Aqua or anything. That's, when you take out, I mean, Forts Hill's not that big, and you steal three of their field guys, that's kind of a hole. But
Yeah, it's hard to be competitive with DWP.
Right.
Their salaries are out of sight.
Yeah.
They're, and we did get one from the Water Academy that we held. One of those new people came from, attended the Water Academy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know he had, I think he had a T1, a D1, or T2, D2, whichever it was. Mm-hmm. Because his dad told me that he got a job here because his dad used to work for me at Metropolitan. So you stay in the water business, yeah.
Anyway.
Jay, just one more question. I've got a message from a resident on Newburgh Drive. Is there any work?
What's the street?
You know, Newburgh?
Newburgh.
Where work has been done on some water pipes for a long stretch of time.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I'm not familiar with that, but I'll look into it.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Other questions? Item 10, Courtney, General Report on Engineering.
We've had some construction delays, so we have not been spending as much budget as we are trying to move these projects along. It's very difficult when it rains one day out of the week, and then you spend the rest of the week trying to clear up the rain. We had this issue last year, and so we've encountered it again on several of our projects. We still are moving them forward, though, so there is progress, but it does definitely impact us. We have had no one leave externally from the engineering department, only two other departments within the agency. We've had two admins move into one into the finance, and then one over to water resources. But we have had the replacements, and the replacements are doing very well with our group, fit in great, and are really stepping up, especially when Liz was out, but they were able to fill that void, which was really appreciated. So I wanted to highlight their additional work that they were able to fill that. We have a temp employee currently that we are using through a temp agency for engineering to handle one of our other engineers who's on maternity leave. We did an analysis and looked at that and didn't want to have a gap in the projects that they were working on. Our engineers are working on anywhere from 6 to 10 projects at any given time for the CIP, and that would be a big hole to leave those projects not moving forward. So temp employee is doing very well, but I haven't had the opportunity to introduce them, and I forgot to include them. So next meeting, I'll try to get them in here just so they can say hi and you can be introduced. We also have an intern. We are currently working with an intern. They are active in school, getting their engineering degree, and their hours are from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. After that, they go to school. So they also aren't here because they go to school until after 6 o'clock. But they've been working out great, getting a lot of experience in the CIP group. And then here coming up pretty soon, we're going to shift them over to the development side and let them get experience in the development side. They've been helping out with our standards and updating our standards, and have been welcome. We were originally having a summer intern as well, but that person has found a different internship that is also offering them a job. So at the end, so we can't compete with that. We don't have a set job, but we wish them all the best. And we're happy that we had the opportunity to at least interview them and see somebody interested in the engineering field moving forward. We have been going through and reviewing the many consultant on-calls. As you know, we currently have 22 on-call. We went through the process, and a lot of people throughout the years since I've been here have been interested in working with us. So now we have over 40 who have submitted. Wow. We also expanded this and wanted to get some of the smaller firms in there and some of the specialty firms. So of that 40, there are a significant number that are very specific to geotechnical work or specific to only construction management or coding inspection or survey. And right now, the way we have to do the process is we have to go through one of our prime consultants that are on the list, one of the 22, even if we just want a simple survey job or a simple geotechnical job. So we will come back to this committee, I do believe, in April. It's one of the many items in April. With the list of the consultants, we are still evaluating them. We've gone through most of the evaluation. There are a lot of good firms, and so I don't know how many we're going to remove because we want to have a deep bench for the amount of work we have coming up. And so that's just a precursor to next month when we bring that forward, but it did get a lot of interest. We have a lot of consultants that want to work with us, so that's good to see. And as Keith mentioned, we are going through our budget. We've gone through our preliminary draft, and we're waiting to hear back from finance to see if they are okay with the numbers we've presented. A lot of projects that were moving or delayed are going to get pushed to next year, but we have all of projects that we plan for next year still on the horizon. So there's a lot of projects moving forward. As I said, there's a lot of projects going to construction that this coming by the end of this fiscal year or before the end of this fiscal year. And that's really where the majority of the money is spent. So there will be a lot of active projects. And to that end, we are recruiting for a senior construction inspector so that we can have an additional staff there that would be able to hopefully handle some of the pipeline jobs that we are currently in design on, saving us the consultant money. And then when not doing that, the development has not slowed down at all. So they will also be able to fill in for development work and inspection. So that position is mostly 60 to 70% billable. So it covers itself through that.
Seeing no public comment.
Anything from the committee? Director, President Martin.
Of the 40 or so that we have on call, are any local to Santa Clarita or these are all outside?
Yeah, we have several that are local to Santa Clarita. Definitely the survey and some geotechnical. We have some smaller engineering firms that are also being established and some larger engineering firms that have a satellite office in Santa Clarita. So good representative locally. Definitely one of the considerations. Obviously, prior working knowledge or having worked with them before is a big trait that we're looking for in these consultants. But we also have some that are brand new to us. But we know them either through other agencies or other work that we've done, or we've heard of them. So the proposals sometimes have to speak for themselves. But overall, very good participation, good proposals coming in from the various engineering firms.
Good. Thank you. Good report, Carl.
Did Jacobs Engineering get on our list?
They are one of the consultants on the list.
I know they wanted to get on there.
Yeah.
They're not called Jacobs Engineering anymore. Jacob's Solutions.
Oh, and Jacob's Solutions.
They changed their name.
It's all good. Okay, seeing nothing else, we're done. Thank you very much.
Excellent.